ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
And good day, good night. Welcome to Soccer Today for July 26, 2018. We'll start with the Canadian review today, and a little later on, we'll talk about what excites us about the upcoming European season. But first of all, good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, Kevin.
Last night, Canadian Championship wrapped up its semifinals. To Ottawa was traveling to Toronto for the second leg of their semifinal. Montreal traveled to Vancouver for their second leg. Let's start with the first game that happened last night. Ottawa traveling to Toronto. It was 1-0 after the first game, a goal by Jonathan Osorio, and it finished 4-0, 3-0 last night for Toronto.
Yeah, look, I watched the game last year. I've obviously watched all four of the Ottawa Fury games against TFC over the past 2 years. In the last year's series, ironically, considering how, you know, the play of TFC had ended last year versus this year just wasn't close. I don't know what exactly that was. It's kind of funny because Ottawa was worse last year and Toronto was playing much better. And when you have the situation, maybe it's because Toronto didn't take them for granted this year, and particularly in the second leg. I just thought that from start to finish, it was just dominant from TFC. And that's to be expected when a big team, a bigger team, and in this case they are, plays the smaller team. The bigger team needs to dictate the terms. Otherwise, they're going to let that smaller team start to get the lead. And TFC just simply never let Ottawa get the lead. Ottawa looked pretty good for the end of the first leg and really good on set pieces. And I think in their USL season, there's a lot to really look forward to. They're just sitting on that final playoff spot right now. And I think that this is a team that Julien de Guzman has put together that's pretty good, that's going to be able to play to their strengths and can have a good finish the season. And I look forward to that, and I will cheer them on every step of the way as they hope to make the USL playoffs this year. But in terms of their matchup with TFC, just the talent gap was obvious. And I, you know, from TFC's perspective too, the talent gap was obvious, but it was the Canadian kids, the young Canadian kids that were getting it done. And, you know, Jonathan Osorio, early, he's got the front foot on the MVP of the tournament so far with the two goals in both these games, and his 13th goal in all competitions this year. No one on earth would have picked that.
He's got the upper hand in the MVP of the team this year, never mind this tournament. He's TFC's MVP so far in 2018, in my opinion. But Jonathan Osorio scored another goal last night, the third, I believe, for Toronto, and it ended up 3-0 last night, 4-0 on aggregate. Anything we can take out of this game? Of course, there was some rotation yesterday, and Josie Altidore was playing. Is this into the mindset of getting Josie back to full form?
Yeah, 100%. He played first half. Jordan Hamilton played the second half. Jordan Hamilton got a golden game, too. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that they wanted to get him another run out. Mbenga as well, and we always talk about Josie, and we ignore Mbenga, who is an incredibly athletic defender and, you know, if healthy, one of the best defenders in this league. Both of those players got some time yesterday, and both of them excelled and looked great. Mbenga was every bit. He looks like he's got his sharpest best and back, and that's huge. But in terms of Josie, I think they wanted to get him just a little bit more time because he's going to start on Saturday. And they need every push. You know, they need 3 points pretty much every week out. You know, maybe if they win 3 or 4 in a row in MLS, they can afford to drop a point here and there, but they really need to get in a role in MLS, and this was about getting Josie healthy. And once they got that goal in the first half, which was massive for them, I think really at that point they went, okay, we can relax a little bit. I'll tell you, Kevin, one scene was it was pretty lackluster for the first 20 minutes or so. I think Ottawa was trying to slow things down, and Toronto just wasn't quite firing quite yet. The subs, so Bradley and Javinko and the whole nine yards, got up to warm up in the south end, and the whole south end, who had been pretty dead for most of the game at that point, stood up and were cheering and they were singing and all that because the stars were standing up. And then it wasn't long after they stood up to do that warm up that TFC got the goal, which pretty much salted the tie away at that point. Ottawa needed to score 3 to eliminate them, and then they sat down, and I think Javinko just walked down the tunnel at some point in the first half, and that was it. They knew he wasn't going to touch the field, and they didn't need to use him, and that was probably for the best.
Well, yes, it was for the best. Javinko's been trying to carry this team by himself when all the injuries occurred, so Now he needs a bit of a rest to get ready for a stretch that they need to win. You mentioned putting a few good results, a few wins in a row. Basically, Toronto needs to do in the next month what Montreal has been doing in the last month and a half in the league.
Yeah, and well, they've got three in a row, all competitions. Ottawa, obviously two against Ottawa, but from a confidence standpoint, I don't want to ignore that, but you're right. I mean, I was talking to a friend last night after the game. I went out to have a little bite to eat after, and you know, we were chatting about TFC, and we agreed that kind of we were a little bored of TFC, as stupid as that sounds, and they were just too good at the start of the year, and the CCL run kept us interested, but in terms of MLS play, it's almost for the best from a like narrative standpoint that they've dug this hole, because now it's interesting again.
Kind of. It's still interesting when you see your team above that red line. But we'll see what TFC is able to put together, if they're able to put together a few strings of win, because results just don't cut it at this point. You're right, they need wins. They need 3 points almost on every single occasion. Now let's move to Vancouver. Montreal put up a little bit of a rotated lineup as well last night. Piatti, Alessandro Silva on the bench to start the game. And it made a difference. And Jordi Reyna scored early in the 18th minute to put things level in this tie. And then a soft penalty call buried by Kamara, which Diop was actually really, really close to saving that penalty, like an inch away. He actually saw it pretty good, was able to guess the right side and almost stopped it, would have changed everything. But he didn't. And 2-1 at that point on aggregate, 2-0 in the game. Montreal then brought on Alejandro Silva and Nacho Piatti. The game changed. Montreal was able to create more attack, but weren't able to finish. There was a few good chances, a few shots by Piatti, one deep from Tider that were just not on target, and a few other instances. Montreal, if they would have got that goal late in the game, they would have moved on with the famous away goal, but it wasn't meant to be. The Voyageurs Cup is going to have to wait another year before it comes back home.
Sure, yeah, the all-time leading winners of the Voyageurs Cup are, of course, Montreal, who won it, all of them, in the pre-Canadian Championship era.
10 or 11, I can't remember, but I think it's 10 total with the one in 2015, well, 14, the left of the 2015 run.
I'd have to, yeah, I don't know off the top of my head what TFC's at right now, but I'd have to think if TFC wins it this year, they're starting to be able, you know, they're on the same straight away now. I think if they do that, Vancouver has the one. So there you go. Yeah, look, I think that this was, in many ways, the Whitecaps impact game, understandably, was kind of a tactical battle and sort of a chess match that both managers were trying to sort of see what they could get away with. And we were talking off air, and I think you said this on your French show, that Montreal really lost the series in the first leg when they didn't take advantage of the run and play that they had in that game. And last night, you're right, once Piatti and the others came on, it was a different looking impact team. And I watched the last 20 minutes of that game with my browser open to via.ca because I was, you know, ready as soon as they scored the goal to pull the trigger on a train ticket down on the 6th of August. But alas, I saved a little money. About $100 it was going to cost me. They weren't too bad.
Not too bad.
It was pretty good altogether. But nonetheless, I'm not flying to Vancouver for that. For August, I'm not paying $900. Patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork if you want. But
Well, you just have to wait for the second leg. The second leg will be in Toronto anyway. So the first leg of this game will be August 8th in this Canadian Championship 2018 final for the Voyageurs Cup between Vancouver and Toronto. Now, when we look at this matchup of the final, who is the favorite? Is it Vancouver? Even though in the league that they're struggling a bit, they're going down the standings as we speak, but they showed at least in the last 2 weeks that they can afford to put a B lineup to be nice, maybe a B-minus lineup in the first leg, and get the job done at home. Can they put a strong lineup for the first game at home and then hope that the amount of goals they could score could be enough? Because you mentioned Montreal, that's where they lost this tie, is last week in Montreal when Jackson Amel hit two posts and got a goal disallowed for being offside. The game would have been totally different if Montreal went to Vancouver 2 or 3 goals up.
No, for sure. The answer to that question, and I don't want to you know, this is not a hot take show, so people will understand this. I'm not going to give you a hot take on that. The answer is it depends on what TFC does in Vancouver. I think to be the man, you have to beat the man in general. But so I will make Toronto the slight favorite because they are the champions. They are the defending champions of everything, as we know, including this title for two runs in a row now. So you have to make them the slight favorite. And they do, as a club, prioritize getting to the CCL again. I think they like those, you know, winter games, and you know, as much as it screwed up their season now, I think that's something they really, really want to do, and it will allow them, especially if they missed the playoffs this year, it will allow them to sort of point to and say, look, we had injuries and we didn't necessarily get this done, but at least we, you know, reclaimed this and we have a chance to reset and really go for everything moving forward next year. It's that said, I don't know what Greg Vanney's going to do in that first leg, because I do think they believe they can close the gap and get back into that MLS playoff. And obviously the grand prize is to win the MLS Cup again. And if they get in the playoffs, I know they believe they can win it. And really there's not a lot to argue that they can't. So once I see that lineup, I'll give you a more concrete answer. But if they can get out of Vancouver down one or less, then I think absolutely Toronto will win this series. If Vancouver can score two at home, I think Vancouver's gonna hold off in Toronto, and they're, you know, gonna finally get their second. They're gonna finally get a little bit of sweet revenge over TFC. I don't say revenge, a little bit of, they'll enjoy it. The Vancouverites will enjoy winning the Voyagers Cup in you know, the center of the universe. So that'll be fun for them. But yeah, ask me after the first, not even after the first leg. Ask me after the lineups are out of the first leg.
Yeah, maybe. But here, what I find interesting, too, is the way Vancouver played yesterday, and it was mentioned on the broadcast, and they played a bit more free. It's like they were liberated of a certain situation. Was the Alphonso Davies, quote-unquote, saga? Because it wasn't really a saga. We all knew who was going to sign somewhere. Come on. We can see things with our own eyes. We knew the writings were on the wall, as we say. And Alphonso Davies was on his way out. But could this saga and could this, I don't want to say turmoil either, but it could have been a distraction for the team or for Robinson. And he's been asked about this question almost every day over the last 10 days. So now that it's been done, and we know that he was in Philly last night to watch the Bayern Munich game, and he had his physical. We've seen the videos. Look at my Twitter feed on my Facebook page. I retweeted the videos from Bayern Munich talking about Alphonso Davies and his story and his physical, and you can see how fit he is. But was that saga, was that distraction, the fact that now it's resolved, it felt like Vancouver played a bit more freely?
And perhaps, I don't know how much it would have distracted the other players. I think they probably would have been a little more informed of what was going on and probably had an understanding that he was going to eventually go to Bayern Munich. And PSG swept in at last moment. They knew he was going somewhere big, right? And
that's true.
I'm sure that
no one's talking about this. PSG almost came in with more. Well, they did came in with more money, but it was a bit too late. Penn was already on paper.
My God, a Canadian player was being bid between PSG and Bayern Munich. What world are we living in? Anyway.
Well, Besiktas tried a few weeks ago. Let's not forget that. But Besiktas did not fork out enough money.
Yeah, well, Besiktas, they would have looked at and went, you know who's bidding for them, guys? You might want to, oh, you're cute. That would have been what they would have said.
We'll get the next one. Atiba, get us the next Canadian prospect.
Yeah. Oh, we've heard about this Canadian kid. Yeah, no. Can I interest you in Jonathan Rosario? Maybe, I think it's that.
Maybe, yeah. Anyways, go ahead.
Which we can talk about, but yeah, maybe that's a topic for another day. We should try and get Jonathan Rosario on the show. We haven't interviewed a TFC player ever. An active one? I don't know.
it's been a long time.
Yeah, even in school football days, we can never get TFC players because every other team would work with us. The TFC wouldn't figure that one out. But at any rate, enough of that. All right. Look, Vancouver, Toronto. It's going to be an interesting final. You asked me, what do you think? Who do you think wins it? What are your early? I mean, August 6th is a ways away yet, but what is your initial gut reaction to who's going to win this?
Both teams are in a particular situation when it comes to their league standings. So it's going to be up to the depth of the team. Who has the more depth into its roster? now that Toronto's players are slowly coming back from injury and getting back into form, and Vancouver showed that some of their Canadian kids, some of their players too on the sideline, could actually help and be influential, at least in this tournament. So I have to agree with you in a way. It depends what lineup that they do put out for the first game on both sides. But it's going to be who's the most depth. And for me, Toronto has the most depth if you don't look at the injury list. The fact that that injury list is slowly getting shorter is beneficial for Toronto. But their hole that they've dug themselves into the league might be to the detriment of the Voyagers Cup, and especially with all those games in a very short time. And it's philosophically speaking, both teams want to win it, but when it comes down to playing on a Wednesday and on Saturday and the following Wednesday and the following Saturday, you have tough choices to make. Who's going to make the toughest choices, and who's going to decide to maybe gamble a little? I think with what Toronto showed us last night, but granted, Vancouver did put a strong lineup too. No Felipe, but Kai Kamara was there, and there was Jordi Reyna and Mesquita. So there was a strong lineup on Vancouver's side. But if Josie plays here, let's put it this way. If Josie plays, Toronto wins.
That should just be on the badge for the rest of the year, Kevin. If Josie plays, Toronto wins. That should be their club logo. Forget All for One. If Josie plays, Toronto wins. Should be on the back of the collars. All right. Should we take a little quick break and have a little European warm-up? We're going to have a little warm-up conversation for the European season, which is right around the corner.
Exactly. We'll take a very short break and come back with a little light conversation about what we expect in a few weeks.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Get your beautiful SPN mug like this one at sportsinspired.ca, the official store of the Sports Podcasting Network. Now, Dwayne, the European season starts just in a few weeks, August 10th and August 18th, 17th, and then August 5th. All the different leagues in Europe, the biggest one, from France to Germany to England to Italy, starts in the next few weeks. And we were thinking of having just a little conversation of what are the top three things we can't wait to see, and maybe the one that we really don't have a lot of time for. Let's start with the fun things we need to see, and I'll start with you, Dwayne. What is one of the most expected possible things for you in this European season?
Well, one of the things I'm most looking forward to seeing in this European season is and I'm going to stick to brand here to start, obviously, Manchester City had 100 points in the Premier League last year. That was a phenomenal season, a record-breaking season in every capacity. But there was one thing that they didn't do, one thing that I think that they internally really list, they wouldn't say this out loud, but internally are listing as probably a priority, and that is to match the famous Arsenal team and to go through an entire season without losing. Now, yes, I'm being a bit of an arrogant City supporter here, but I am looking forward to see whether, well, they got 100 points last year.
Thank you, Liverpool. Let's not forget Liverpool, what Liverpool did for the rest of the league last year.
Yeah, so it's, I'm going to enjoy the start of the season. They start with, hell, Arsenal looks okay to me this year. I could almost add that as something maybe you will, but to see what they look like without Wenger there. So maybe this will end in the first week, but just to watch that chase and see it slowly start to build. If we get into October, November, and they haven't lost, then City fans will quietly start to think about it. If we get in through December and they still haven't lost, then everyone's going to be talking about it. It's going to be a very interesting chase. Maybe this ends early, but that idea, that concept of seeing where you can push a little bit further is interesting to me. And, maybe they're going to prioritize, well, they are well prioritized in Champions League too, but this is a club that feels that they have enough depth and enough strength across the board. 10 years after the takeover, which is coming up in a month, it'll be the decade anniversary of City winning the lottery. They're already talking about stuff like this. So, you may not like the fact that the money came in, and I understand that from philosophical, level, but can't deny that it didn't change that club immensely, and that they've been successful in every way that the money should allow them to be.
They're not looking at the championship anymore. So just that is big, too. But that's something else. One of the most, for me, and I'll start, you started with the Homer one. I'll start with my Homer one. When I look at Chelsea, a club that might not be done his transfer move, a lot of rumors with Hazard maybe replacing Ronaldo at Real Madrid, or a lot of movement. For me, it's the movement on the sideline that was kind of interesting for Chelsea. They sacked Antonio Conte, and now Antonio Conte is suing Chelsea of how the sack happened. Maurizio Sarri, former head coach of Napoli, who's been replaced by Ancelotti in Napoli, and now that's a lot of but now he's coaching Chelsea, and Sarri. For me, his philosophy of how to coach and not necessarily caring about the transfer market, the club will get players, he'll teach the player he has and mold them into the type of soccer he wants to play. For me, that's important because we forget sometimes how the team aspect, how the actual philosophies, instincts, how you want your club to play over a full season, over different competitions, can be important. Now, if Hazard stays or goes, there'll be a big difference. But the fact that Conte already left maybe tells you that Hazard might be staying. And the fact that he rejected 3 bids for Willian from Barcelona, it makes a big difference too. The Chelsea team could be maybe, I wouldn't say back as a title contender off the hand, but if they have a good few results at the beginning of the season and their shape and their philosophies of how they play evolves, they could be a title contender in 2018-19.
Yeah, and look, I mean, if City doesn't, you know, go out gangbusters like they did last year, the title race could be incredibly interesting in the Premier League for sure. I think City has the potential to go out gangbusters, but they also, you know, things happen. The ball is round, and we've seen them slip back before. So until they do it 2 years in a row and consistently do it 2-3 years in a row, we can't just assume that they're going to. And last year could have just been a special case. Certainly it was a special case, but they could slip back for sure. And if they do, both Chelsea, Liverpool, hell, I even just said I think Arsenal is going to be interesting to watch this year as well. So, yeah, the Premier League, just in general, I'm excited to see again. It is something that I love. It's like it's when I don't have Premier League soccer on a Saturday morning, I don't even quite know what to do with myself. This summer's been a little bit easier because of the World Cup, but, yeah. You know.
All right, let's go with your second story, and you can't wait for
it. All right, I'm going to go south of England. I'm going to talk about La Liga, and obviously with Ronaldo leaving and with that, I think Barcelona very close to a turnover. You know, Messi's got a few more years left. I'm not going to say that, but there's changes happening at Barca, and the changes happening at Barca very soon. And I look at that entire race, which has been kind of boring over the years, and I look at this very like little engine that could. It has consistently been there in Atletico, and I wonder if this is the year that we're going to get a true three-way race in La Liga like we had a few years ago when Atletico Madrid did win it. Well, it was only two-way race at that point because Real Madrid slipped back pretty badly. Yeah. I think that it's going to be a fascinating season in La Liga, and I think that I truly do think that Atleti does have a chance to compete with the big boys. And it might just be a small window. This might be, you know, once every 6-7 years, there's a chance for another team to step up and challenge the two big boys there. And I think this might be that season that, you know, the transition at Real Madrid is going to be fascinating to see what they can do without him, whether you're still an immensely talented team, it's not kid ourselves, but there's going to be a transition because he was a true difference maker, which, you know, made that what the difference maker does. It made the difference between close games. And, you know, they dropped 2 or 3 points here and there, and suddenly the race is up for grabs in my mind because these other teams are able to take more points off of them. You're going to look at just, you know, Barca's obviously the champion, so they're the one who has to drop back to make this a title race. But I do, as I said, I think that they are just getting to that 1 year older, and their transition has to happen sooner rather than later. And it's going to be interesting. I'm fascinated to watch La Liga play out this year. And who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be, you know, Barca 100, Real Madrid 95, Atleti, and the rest again. But I think it's going to be interesting to watch.
For me, the second thing that I'm looking forward to is to see if Juventus will actually lose a game in 2018-19, at least in Serie A. Because they had the best roster in the entire league to begin with. Then you add Cristiano Ronaldo. Well, what is it going to happen? And just, we haven't talked about them, but last week the figures of his medical were made public. And he's in better shape than a 20-year-old at 33. The guy's chiseled. The guy looks like a statue. If you would see a statue that way, by the way, not the statue of his face that we saw, which was terrible, but a statue of his body, he's more chiseled. Like, a statue like this, we would be thinking, yeah, that's not a real portrayal of a human being. You cannot look like this. Well, I guess you can. And Ronaldo's making all of us a bit aware of our lack of 8 abs and other 7% body fat. Anyways, Ronaldo and Juventus. What is going to be the impact of a Ronaldo? We already seen the financial impact in the amount of jerseys sold and the amount of season tickets sold. Now, can they translate that into maybe an undefeated season? Maybe a Champions League trophy? That will be interesting to me.
Yeah, Juve will be all about the Champions League this year. They will. They're going to win the Serie A with, you know, on a canter. Like, I can't see Napoli challenge them, and Napoli is really the only other team I think even remotely in the conversation. So it's I don't know if Serie A is going to be interesting so much. It's going to be, but the Juve certainly will be, in the same way that PSG is interesting on every year, right? And PSG, I don't have them listed, but I could. I find them fascinating to watch. I do actually watch a lot of PSG games.
Mbappe, come on. Yeah, watching Mbappe will play, just watching him run. Dwayne, did you know this, that he played the semifinal and the final with a back injury? Jeez, no one knew. It was like one of the very rare instances where they were able to keep something under wraps.
Yeah. I want to see a match race with Mbappe versus a 100-meter sprinter at some point, too, at this point. If you really want to get outside the box and you're thinking, yes, I think on the track that the sprinter wins, but I think on the field Mbappe would win. It's so fast.
Well, we talked about this during the World Cup, right? If you just have a pure Bolt versus Mbappe on a track, Bolt will destroy. Go onto a grass surface and put a ball at their feet, and Mbappe wins.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, the last one I have, Kevin, and I'm going to go a little, I don't know if it's homerish or not, but it's I'm going to go with the young Canadian and American players. The obvious, you know, Pulisic, we've been watching for a while, and we're going to see what happens to him, and that's going to be a fascinating story to play out. We've talked Davies to death over the last week. He's going to be a fascinating player to see what he does and where he plays in January. I'm very much interested to watch those two stories play out. But this one story that I personally have a lot of vested interest in, and this isn't going to play as big outside of Voyageur circles and maybe bitter Orlando City circles, is Kyle Larin.
Besiktas.
And see what Kyle Larin can do. Yeah, and whether he gets consistent playing time and what happens to him. I'm fascinated because Kyle Larin has reached a certain peak in his career where he's at a precipice. He either has to become that player that we think he can be, or he evens out and he's just, you know, I don't say just flippantly. He's another Paul Pesce-Salido. He's another, which would be great for Canada. That's a decent level. Paul Pesce-Salido only ever got to a certain level. You know what I mean? Like, whether Kyle Larin can break through that ceiling and become a player that's known outside of niche circles, or whether he's just going to level off at this point. And I think that we're going to know this answer, the answer to this question, come
soon.
December, maybe March at the latest.
I agree with you. And the fact that Kyle Larin was having a better second part of the season last year, and we saw him do some braces, we saw him score a few goals and getting to a confidence and seeing being more on the field, could be a good way. And I'll finish the show with mine. We don't have time for our things we don't like, so we might be touch on this tomorrow. But I'll finish with this. Balou is still with Barcelona, but not B right now. He's with the first team. He's in the United States with Barca's US tour. I'm happy. I'm interested to see what's going to happen with Balou. Not on the Canadian side. No. That's not going to be decided in the next 6 months. We'll see. But for Balou, can he bridge from Barcelona B, which actually got relegated to La Liga 3? I don't know how you call it, but the third division in Spain. Could Balou make his way into the first team of Barcelona and be included on a weekly basis, at least in the 18, and maybe get a chance to play with Barcelona? For Canadian fans, for North American fans, MLS fans, former Montreal Impact fans, this could be interesting. And he is included in the Barca's US tour. So the coach wants to see what Ballou can do. And we've talked about, well, now that Barcelona B is being relegated, is he going to move away? Is he going to change the address? Well, maybe it was a blessing in disguise, because maybe now he can find himself a spot in the first team.
Yeah, no, certainly that is something to watch for sure. I'm trying to look up when the next African Cup of Nations is. They changed the schedule on that, so I'm not sure off the top of my head, and unfortunately my internet is not cooperating with right now, but when you answer the Canada question, that's when it's going to be answered, when the next African Cup of Nations qualifying happens, because that's when he'll have to make that decision. But in terms of him in Barcelona, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think he's still obviously going to play at Barca B for the most part this year, but I do think the fact that he's on this tour is an indication that they do take seriously and want to look at him very closely to see what he might be able to bring. And you know, as I said, Barcelona's close to a transition time, and he might see some Copa del Rey time, and hopefully he does. And when Owen Hargreaves was making these decisions, I was very anti Owen Hargreaves. But now I'm a little bit more
older.
Philosophical. Yeah. And I want him to choose Canada, but I'm not going to lose my mind if he doesn't. And it's still a victory for the Canadian system when players that come from the system play at a high level, regardless of what they do. I'm actually more reflective of the Owen Hargreaves years now that I am older, that I think it is. I still disagree with his decision, and I particularly disagree with how he made the decision in terms of him having that video crew that was there and lying directly to the face of the reporters. That's what really irritated me too, and still always will. But I do think that it did help Canadian soccer, because he was Canadian and everyone knows that. They know in Germany that he was a Canadian. They don't think that he grew up in England. They know exactly where he's from. And I was reading some of the Davies stuff, and Hargreaves' names come up because it's a natural comparison, especially if you're clueless about all the sort of, you know, the small little group of us that don't like him. They have no clue about that. And they say, yeah, it's the second Canadian we've had. They accept the fact that players play for national teams that aren't necessarily where they're from sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's a... You know what you said reminded me of another situation where a certain player lied to your face just a day before announcing that he was American and not Canadian. Hi, Teal. How you doing? All right. That'll be enough for today. We'll be back tomorrow with our last show live for a week. We're taking a week off. We'll have some pre-recorded shows dropping at the usual time next week. Some interviews that Dwayne and I have been working on. So you'll have some great content next week as well. No live shows on YouTube next week. But as always, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame. And we'll be back tomorrow with a weekend preview and our preview of the things to come in the following days. And until tomorrow, as always, visit sportsinspired.ca for your great merchandise inspired by the beautiful game and other sports, and the official store of the Sports Podcast Network. And as until tomorrow, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.